Hart Island is a mile-long strip of land in the waters off New York City. Since 1869, more than a million people have been buried there in mass graves with no headstones. Today, we continue a new series from Radio Diaries called The Unmarked Graveyard. Each story untangles mysteries about people buried in America's largest public cemetery, the lives they lived, the people they left behind.
Neil Harris was last seen in Inwood, New York on December 12th.
So many questions, man. So many questions.
You can't help but wonder what her life has been.
I never went back and I never looked for him again.
Today's story is about Noah Krzyzewski. Krzyzewski was a composer who wrote experimental electronic music. He called it hyperrealism. He died a few years ago at the age of 75. But before he died, he made a surprising decision. His husband, David Sachs, tells the story.
My name is David Sachs. I was the husband of the late Noah Krzyzewski. We lived together for 42 years. He was always lighthearted and interested in everything. And we agreed with so much. We found the same movies funny. We read the same books. It was just a remarkably satisfying relationship. So I was lucky. And I'm so glad that I have his music. These are all his CDs. I think I will start with this piece. And when I first knew him, he was doing what we call field recordings. He would go out with a tape recorder and tape sounds and so on. Takes sounds that we have all heard and all known and plays with them a little bit, stretches them, integrates them with other sounds. He loved walking down the street in Manhattan and where you could hear languages not only that you didn't speak, but that you didn't even recognize. The idea of a sound you couldn't quite identify, you squint and squint your ears, you know what I'm saying? Let me just play one more thing, if I may.
Awake.
This one is called Sleeping Awake.
Pleasure to die. Sleeping.
As he got older, I mean, the music became a little bit more serious. In other words, a little bit less playful. The way life becomes a little bit less playful as you get older. You become more and more aware of the inevitable termination that will await us all. So this was the last piece that Noah completed. I think just before he knew he was sick. Noah knew he was going to die for several months. He had bladder cancer, and he declined to have his bladder removed. He was 75, and he thought, this was the beginning of a slope, and he didn't want to go down it. And I remember the surgeon was stunned because no one had ever declined. Everyone wanted to grapple for every minute of life. So anyway, we knew for a while that he was going to die. But we didn't know at that time whether he would live 3 more weeks, 3 more months, 3 more days, 3 more hours. We didn't know. We tried not to talk too much about death because he didn't want to see me crying or see me upset. And so I had to put on a happy face. Everything is hunky-dory. But we did talk about what he wanted to happen to his remains after he died. The options are always the traditional burial, I mean, the way one's parents had, a family plot. But nothing seemed to him more vulgar than fetishizing death with real estate, you know, a stone, a marker, a mausoleum. He just didn't want a part of it. And then as we were looking at various options, I guess we first learned about Hart Island during the pandemic. So the idea of being buried collectively in a what they used to call a pauper's grave seemed very meaningful to him. And the more we talked about it, the more it seemed appealing. You know, the simplicity, the anonymity, the humility, and it was on the water, which he loved. for someone who was such an egalitarian, who believed genuinely in everyone's equality, it was the right decision for him. And we didn't tell anyone. We didn't discuss it with anyone. I remember when the hospice nurse, who was wonderful, was very upset when she learned he was going to be buried in Hart Island. She had this idea that it was not decent. It was just like a garbage dump for only the unknown, who no one cared about. But she came to realize the meaningfulness of his decision. A lot of people, I think, look at death as a kind of way to extend your ego, either your monument or the way in which you're buried. And ego stops with death. We had a wonderful time, 3 more months, and then he got too weak. He became delirious, and not the kind of delirium like when you're high or drunk, you know, festive and funny, but the sad kind, you know, where you don't know who you are. It was hard, man. It was hard. At the very end, I had been up several nights with him. You know, I was tired. We went to sleep together. Kissed him goodnight, told him I loved him, as I did every day for the previous 42 years. And in the morning, he was dead. You know when someone is dead. It's not only that you poke them and they don't get up, but you know, you have the feeling that that person is dead. And it was quiet for a long time. And then I was left alone in the apartment, and that was how it ended. I still find it very difficult, even though it's been 2 years, I find it difficult. You know, I wake up sometimes, and I see he's not in bed with me, and my first instinct is to call him, assuming he's in the other room. And then I realize, more or less quickly, that no, he's not there. And that hits you sometimes like a ton of bricks. He's not in the other room or in another city. He's not anywhere. And then, almost immediately, a more calming realization sinks in. Well, he's everywhere.
That was David Sacks, with music by his late husband, Noah Krzyzewski. Our story was produced by the team from Radio Diaries. To hear more stories in this series, visit the Radio Diaries podcast.